Our high school guidance counselor used to ask us what you would do if you had $1 million, didn't have to work. And then invariably, whatever you'd say, that was supposed to be your career. So if you wanted to fix old cars, then you're supposed to be an auto mechanic.
So what did you say?
I never had an answer. I guess that's why I'm working at Inatech.
No, you're working at Inatech because that question is bullshit to begin with. If everyone listened to her, there'd be no janitors because no one would clean up if they had $1 million.
If I had $1 million. If I had $1 million.
I'm talking about millions of dollars.
What would you do if you had $1 million?
I'll tell you what I'd do, man. Two chicks at the same time, man.
We're living in a material world and I am a material girl or boy.
Well, what about you now? What would you do?
Besides two chicks at the same time?
Oh, yeah.
Nothing.
Nothing, huh?
I would relax. I would sit on my ass all day. I would do nothing.
Well, you don't need $1 million to do nothing, man. Take a look at my cousin. He's broke, don't do
Hey, man, do we have Mike covered?
$1 million, if I had $1 million, well, I'd buy you a house.
Well, I don't pay Stacks and Jacks. Somehow, he's just from over on the board. SP Futures up 39.50. NASDAQ Futures up 114. Brendan, are you with us for this big rally?
I am here, Chief. What's going on the rally?
What do you think it might be? Just out of curiosity?
I think everything's starting to move up again because of some Supreme Court decisions and the fact that everything is opening up in the lakefront in Chicago.
Just saying, you know. Supreme Court decisions. What do they decide now?
Well, the opinion from yesterday, opening up the economy because of the LGBTQ rights issue.
You know, I did not hear that one. What is this?
They made a decision yesterday that you cannot fire anybody simply because they're gay or transgender. And it was a 6-3 decision with Chief Justice Roberts and Neil Gorsuch on the side of the gay and lesbian people. And also, the majority opinion was written by Neil Gorsuch.
Why did anybody think you could fire somebody just from being gay?
It's been happening. There was a saying in the world that you can get married on Sunday and fired on Monday if they found out that your partner was the same sex.
Ah.
There was a movie about it called Philadelphia, if you remember, with Tom Hanks.
That was more dealing with the AIDS crisis, where he was the lawyer playing somebody who was afflicted with AIDS, HIV. But the same theory, yes. But once they decided that, once they found out that the guy was gay, he was fired.
Did you see the, way back, talk about a TV show, what the Boston Legal episode about the guy who, got some religion and was working in some law firm, and the lady wanted to fire him? And he said she couldn't, and it went, and James Spader was representing the lady who was firing him. And it was...
Didn't see that. I didn't watch Boston Legal very much.
I thought that show was spectacular. Yes. I'm a big James Spader fan, but the, he joined, what's the religion where, L. Ron Hubbard,
Scientology.
I think he became a Scientologist, yeah. And the guy was in this firm, and all he was doing was trying to... People show up, like, for a law or business meeting, and he's trying to recruit them into religion. So it wasn't like he just was this quietly, you know, type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So, they, of course, have the First Amendment, or the Amendment rights, you know, freedom of this, freedom of that. And evidently, at the religion, you have, whatever it was, you start out with all these bad things in your body, and every time you burp or something, one of them leaves... One of the bad things. So, James, he had this lady judge, and he starts talking about how this poor lady attorney at this small firm doesn't need this. This guy basically screwing over a client that comes in the place. And he starts talking about every time something leaves your body, you gain something. And he goes by the judge's thing, and he rips a big fart, and he goes, "There goes one now." The judge is like looking at him, "What the heck, get out of here?" Anyway, it was one of his best arguments ever. Whoever wrote some of that stuff on that show was pretty good. And, anyway.
Well, there should be a religious argument coming up pretty soon. I think there's another case dealing with the rights of religious freedom coming up before the court as well this session. So there should be another opinion or two that are really earth-shattering.
Well, I think as we have the Fed, the Powell starting his march to Capitol Hill in the next couple of days, what do you think, Brendan, if there was some bleep like me there that immediately challenged him that everything he's doing is illegal? Yesterday, the turn of the market, as I had to listen to the people on CNBC ad nauseum, literally ad nauseum, talk about investors all of a sudden getting recharged. I'm thinking, they came out with an announcement, which was, of course, had to be front run, like there's no tomorrow, because yesterday morning I'm wondering, why are we going up all morning? And they came out and said that they were going to put a lot more money in the system and they're going to start buying individual corporate bonds.
Yeah, I saw that. And what is an individual corporate bond, and where do they get the authority for doing that?
Well, so Carl immediately starts firing stuff at me, like, it's against the law. What's with these guys? They're just supposed to be buying U.S. government debt. And obviously, they bought more than that for a while, but they bought bunches of mortgages and things like that with QE3. But the idea that you're going to run in and you're going to prop up, like, United Airlines bonds.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's unconscionable. It's unconscious.
Yes, it is. They're going in. They're just being a stock member purchaser.
Well, but they're so horse bleep at covering their tracks. This would be if we were one of the insiders right now. Those guys. I mean, let's put it this way. I've read a lot of stuff that where people say the stuff from the Bureau of Labor Statistics, of course. I'd have real trouble making money on those announcements anyway, because sometimes if the thing's worse, the market goes up and it's better. I mean, it's a hard one to trade anyway, even if you had it in advance. But I've never really felt that thing was front run, except for the one time where Trump said the day before what it's going to be, right? When mm-hmm. he first got in office. But by and large, I think all this Fed stuff is front run. And I think for a purpose. If a tree falls in the woods and nobody hears it, you know, did it really fall? The Fed wants to get the biggest push out of their announcements they can with them doing the least. They'd rather have the, quote, market do it.
Mm-hmm.
And if they leak something and one of their buddies, one of the banks makes money, it's all the better by running ahead of something. I mean, I don't think they think there's anything wrong with it, to be honest with you.
Well, no, and that makes perfect sense to me, that's what's being done, because it makes a bigger movement in the market.
Yeah, I mean, if I let this leak out a little bit before the announcement's worth four times as much as, because not only do you get the push from the announcement, you get the push from the people that your buddies caught short having to buy and get clobbered on the way back and the way up mm-hmm. or down or whatever yeah. it happens to be. But this thing, I'm looking at these money supply numbers, Brendan, and I never do this. I mean, obviously we have the Stocks and Jocks group that we all contribute to and write back and forth to each other, and then there's my Notre Dame group, and I never really cross one to the other. But yesterday was like the first time I've done it in ages. I said, you guys, you got to be careful, because look at what's happening. I've got the 6 month money supply growth on an annual basis is 37%, and it's going up every month. 3 months is 65. This never happened in 1970 something when we had the great inflation. I mean, what's going to happen?
How long is that sustainable?
It's sustainable till you get some inflation numbers that are 3%, 4%, and 5% a month, and all of a sudden people get really pissed off. I mean, and then you have let's pull it out of the system, like Paul Volcker, and you have some recession worse than we have now. And you have people that are making $35,000 a year, all of a sudden with a 10% inflation rate, getting no raises. I mean, talk about revolution, for God's sake.
I mean, let me ask you this, Chief. How does this impact the election, and when do you think this is really going to hit? Because it seems to me like this is a way to forestall bad economic news before the election
yes.
to ensure that Trump gets elected. And if he doesn't, then it sets the stage for Biden and the Democrats to take a huge hit in the economy because they don't know what they're doing because of the inflationary hits that happened after November.
Exactly. But my question is, if you traditional monetary policy, traditional, whatever the hell that means, when I was in school, yeah, there was a time, you're talking 4 to 6 months for monetary policy to actually hit. And Jimmy Carter made that mistake, or actually made that decision. But in this day's world, I mean, that's different this time, at the incredible rate at which they're doing it, And the fact they're not just, we're not just talking about inching monetary policy up from a 3% growth in money supply to 4.5 over like the next couple months. By the time anybody even really notices it, you know, it's going to take a while. We're talking, you know, trillions of dollars in a couple of week period. So I honestly don't believe, even though that's what I was taught, that this is going to be a 6-month germination period. So I think that the inflation will spring out unless they absolutely throttle the people at the Bureau of Labor Statistics on the inflation numbers. I don't see how you can keep those numbers contained until November.
Until November, so it'll happen before November starts to hit.
Well, I'm thinking, I mean, if we're talking about a 60% money supply growth, I don't see how, you know, the price of everything isn't up way by like September, October. Now, whether it can gather steam in the media, or we can have them talking about God knows what other stuff until then. I mean, I'm really surprised right now. For this, yesterday was the first day I heard. First day. Last week I heard Stephanie Lincoln on CNBC talking about a 25% money supply growth and what are these guys doing. Now, yesterday there was a guy who said, obviously, for whatever reason, the policy is to degrade the currency. Whether it's to pay off bills, whatever it is, it's we're going to degrade the currency, and we're talking about, this is all this largesse. One of these days, I mean, what do you suppose the tax increase is going to be in Illinois next year?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't see how you, Audrey's very busy on houses, and she's got a lot of good clients, and you know, she could use two of her. Because she's got some really good people and she got some good listings, the whole bit. So I'm real happy for her, but she's in the burbs and some of the people are older, so maybe they've got the seniors thing. Somebody who just walks into Chicago willy-nilly and buys some place right now without even thinking about next year, I'd really wonder what that guy was smoking. I mean,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't, what are these numbers gonna be? Well, Jay thinks he's gonna win his amendment. For the income tax, what's it going to be, Brennan, 20, 15, 30?
Well, first, I don't think he's going to win the amendment, especially now. I cannot see people agreeing to allow their taxes to go up because I really don't think there are enough people foolish enough to believe that it's just going to hit the top 1% or 5% as he touted in the fact that most of the people will stay the same or even have their taxes reduced. That's illogical, and I don't think that's going to be a winning argument in November.
Okay, well then, flip the argument around. Unfortunately, a lot of people are sitting at home getting checks. They would rather be working. Well, there's probably some because the checks are big enough, maybe wouldn't rather be working, but I'm going to say most would rather be working. What do you think the average, if you just took a random sample and went and grabbed, 15 people, a couple of rich people, a couple of people from the hood, a couple of people from the Hispanic community, a random sample, just sat them down and say, What is your view of what the state and the city and the federal government, where do you think they are right now? I think just about everybody would say they can't be doing too good, but do you think people have any conception of what the receipts versus expenditures of these various governmental agencies are?
They don't.
I mean, they've got to be.
There's a huge disconnect.
I mean, I have to, without looking at them, I don't know, Maddie, what would your guess? I got to believe right now, the receipts aren't half of the expenditures at any level of government.
I'd say there's a pretty good chance that that's accurate. But, I want to bring one other point that you raised about the people who are getting unemployment right now under the congressional largesse, including that extra $600 a week. First, that extra $600 a week in many cases gives them more money than they were making when they were working.
Right, right.
The second thing is that if you were working, even assuming you're making the exact same amount of money from the federal government payout right now or working, there's another difference, that the money that you're getting from the government as part of this plan is not subject to taxation, whereas if you make the same amount of money as an employee, that goes into your base for how much you pay in income tax. So you're getting more money again by the incremental nature of your income tax.
The only thing that's bad about it, Brendan, is if you're not getting your hospitalization from your former employer, and you maintain your policy, you basically almost your whole month income going to is going to your hospitalization.
Well, that's true, and that's another argument that people haven't seen yet. But and I agree, that's going to be a huge hit, and that again is going to play into, I think, one of the election arguments is health care, maybe not Medicare for all, but you know, something like Obamacare with universal health care coverage that hasn't been raised yet. And I don't know that that's really been focused on by anybody in the news media at any level as to what's the impact on the medical situation because of the pandemic and because of how many people are laid off.
I'll tell you, it's a, well, not like I'm an expert on every single one, but they had somebody on CNBC, a doctor from a group of hospitals in Carolina. I think he said they were losing $23 million a month. And the University of Michigan, what do you call the guy who's the head of the place? The head of a university? University of Michigan's losing a fortune, basically. And they said,
well, a lot of what's happening right now is that hospitals are not doing elective surgeries, they're not seeing people with other illnesses because of the focus on COVID. So, and their costs for COVID with things like their protective equipment and the long shifts, overtime. So the nurses are causing huge hits, and they're not getting the revenue streams from, elective shoulder surgery or knee replacements or things like that. So they're taking a huge hit in many respects, and even laying people off because they can't afford the staff to man the hospital.
It is so counterintuitive, Brendan. If you, and I had this piece of paper here somewhere, what the hell I did with it, but. If you just talk to regular people, I mean, the only way I figure we're not regular is because I've got 30 or 40 people sending me stuff every day that I read. Okay, so if you're not in that loop, you're not going to pick up on a lot of this stuff. I mean, most people would think that all these hospitals, there's more people, Manny, wasn't it, other than the hospitality industry, more people laid off in hospitals in Illinois than any other industry?
Hear that, but it's possible.
It's hospitality and restaurant. Well, I guess that's the same. Maybe hotel. Hotel, restaurant, and hospitals was next. But I'm going to say that our buddy Dr. Billy, who helped you out with your finger, I'll bet he has not done anything other than emergency surgery in 4 months. He's a hand expert.
Yeah. I mean, even dentists for a long time were only doing emergencies.
Well, my guy still hasn't called me. He's older. I'm going to have to get a new guy. But I'm saying the hospitals, most of anything, the place is laid off. One part's working overtime, and the other part's not even there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and a lot of the nurses that I know of are being called in to support the COVID patients, even though they don't have experience in ICU care or emergency treatment. They like neonatal or things like that are being called in for to support the COVID patients that are in the hospital, but because they're not doing as much work as they were before.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, there is so much stuff right now that is absolutely counterintuitive to people, and the differences, and this is kind of what I wrote to my Notre Dame buddies yesterday, is that you have to be very, very careful as to where the inflation dollars go. I mean, if everybody just, I was using this as a joke a year ago. If everybody just went into the Fed Reserve, of course, all those guys are working from home, which is even more bizarre. If everybody walked in with your who's on the $2 bill, Manny? Is it Jefferson?
It is Jefferson, yeah.
If you walked in with your Washington and they gave you a Jefferson in return, so everybody just doubled the amount of money in their pocket and in their bank account, it would do nothing for anybody. It wouldn't do any good. Everybody would just adjust. Your house is, you owe a $60,000 mortgage. Guess what? Now it's $120,000. Just like a stock split. So when guys go down that road, and they do it for a reason. And I'm going to be very blunt here in a sense that I don't know if they're touchy feely buddies. I hope not. But you do it in such a way where your friends make out. Friends being banks, big businesses, who's ever got, this is not going to be even. If it was even, nobody would care.
Mm-hmm.
If all of a sudden the guy making 35 grand a year starts making 70, and the Cheerios was $2 a box, and now it's $4. Nope, it doesn't do anybody any harm or any good, right, Brent? It's just an absolute wasted exercise.
That's right.
But that's not what's happening. It's never what's happening. There's always winners and losers.
Mm-hmm.
And the last time, savers were actually winners. They always got a little more than the inflation rate. Because people who owned homes were winners. Because the price of the home went up, not dramatically, but it went up 6-7% a year when it had been going up 1 and 2. Mm-hmm. People who had assets.
Neither of those are true today, for sure.
But people who owned stock were losers. Because the interest rates went up so much that nobody wanted to own a stock, because the earnings, you're way better off in a fixed income. Now this time, they're throwing so much money into the system and denying that it's there, that the interest rates, for some reason, are staying down. So literally this year, with the way they're going, somebody could borrow $1,000 from you. And at the end of the year, that thing, that $1,000 will only be worth $650, $700. And they're gonna pay you back the same $1,000. Where they should be paying you a lot more, right?
Right.
And this time it's not gonna work out for every man. Last time it did. And the unions, more the industrial unions than the teachers and those guys.
The government workers?
Government worker union. Last time. And you can tell when you listen to somebody on TV that's not, I'll use the term, old enough. They will tell you that you can't have inflation without wages going up. The term used to be cost push inflation. There was demand pull and cost push. You ever heard those terms, Manny? Probably not. Those were the things that described the inflation. And when you got to the cost push side, the issue is that the inflation. And you know, unless you saw it, it is a very lagging indicator, Brendan. And what I say is, maybe if we start having a lot of inflation, the numbers will be out in November. Maybe not. They're not going to show up in the stupid way we do our numbers, because I don't know if they do it on purpose or whatever, they don't show them. But it also happens on the ass end. When Volcker was putting the economy, basically putting the screws to it, and doing almost the same thing we're doing now with COVID, by pulling the money out of the system, the numbers still showed inflation, even though there wasn't any. Let me ask you
this: how, because of all the stuff that is going on with COVID, why is that no longer in the news, and how does that affect the market? The fact that there is still COVID increase in numbers throughout the United States, but it's just like it doesn't exist.
It exists.
It's really like an ostrich in the sand, putting its head in the sand that says, we're not going to report our numbers, or we're not going to have this as a news report. We're not going to hold our regular daily features by the task force, so it no longer exists. And the economic impact on the economy doesn't exist, so we're just going to ignore it.
Well, I don't think it's being ignored. I hear about it all day long.
Not like it was before.
Well, all the hot spots are no longer New York and Chicago. Nobody cares about Houston. Right?
Well, I think that there are a lot of people who think about Houston and the other states. I do think the fact that there are spikes, but you're right that they're in lower population centers. They're not in the mega cities like Los Angeles and New York, Chicago and Detroit. They're in more of the rural states. When I've seen the maps, you know, a lot of the southern states and even the western states, even places like Wyoming, are showing spikes.
Yeah.
But the population is not there, so even though the percentage is increasing dramatically, the raw numbers are not. Like, if you had somebody in New York, looking at the New York numbers, where there might have been 50,000 a day, it might be 3,000 a day in a place like Wyoming or Mississippi. And so 50,000 compared to 3,000 doesn't seem about the same, but the percentage is still a high spike.
Well, from day one, Brendan, the testing and the numbers themselves have been so half-assed, so haphazard, that they're at a point where, how do you, somebody behind there, oh my God, the amount of people in, you know, where are you from, Eddie? Winterset, Iowa, has a hot spot. They just, they now have 1,000 people with COVID. When did they start testing? Well, last week. Okay. I mean, what does that even tell you, Brendan?
Uh-huh.
versus the week before. Versus, it's not like we have intelligent people doing a random survey once every 2 or 3 weeks to really let you know where you're at. We don't have that anywhere.
Well, there's also the pushback against the need for testing or the benefits of testing to identify how big the problem is. So you're right, those numbers are skewed based on where they were last week and where they are now. And the other fallacy is that the increase in the spike is due just because of more testing. That may be true, but instead I think it's important to look at the hospitalization in which states are facing a crisis with their hospital beds and their ICU beds as to whether this is really meaningful. Because obviously the longer you go, like if you're looking at how many people are tested from March 1st till today, those numbers are going to continue to dramatically rise. But you really need to see how many more people are being affected last week.
What does it tell you when the testing facilities in Chicago are shutting down because nobody's showing up?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what does that say? Nobody's sick?
Oh, it tells me that it goes away, that it's gone. So why even bother?
Well, yeah, but if that's not the truth. Anyway, Brennan.
John Wayne's from Winterset, Iowa. I've never actually been there.
But this is where the John Wayne Museum is. I thought maybe if I ever went through Iowa, I'd have to stop.
He's from there. It's a small town. I think it's west.
And what was his dad?
Yeah. I don't know what that means.
He was a druggist.
Oh, what did he do for a living?
He was a druggist.
I did not know that.
And then he moved to California. He opened up a drugstore there or something like that.
Wow.
Thank you, Pilgrim.
Yeah. SP Futures up 37. NASDAQ Futures up 109. We'll come back with Mr. Joel O'Connor.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, including 4 past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is now available to you. We are offering 3 of our research newsletter: the Daily World News Report, our daily stock and futures trading recommendations, and our twice weekly top 3 tiers of recommended stocks, including potential shorts. Each of these reports are available via email before the market opens. Go to our website, www.dacsresearch.net, to obtain the tool that meets your trading and investment needs. Or call me and get 2 weeks free with a 1 month subscription. 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures trading have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
Garson and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Blown up by Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tim Howley, Mr. Miller. S&P futures up 36. NASDAQ futures up, September futures are up 110. We flipped to September is now the front month. And we've dispensed with the June. So we're into the spoos, not the spims. We're into the spoos, SPU. Which was the original one. Hence, they've been known as the spoos ever since. Manny. But you can't really name them.
Did not know that.
Well, you can't. Well, you can't really call them the SPHs. What's those? The spus. And nobody wanted to call them the sperms, the SPMs.
That would be bad.
So they've been the spoos for 40 years, for God's sake. Anyway, that's that story. Dow futures up 443. We've got, so just when you thought, Manny, it was okay to be short, and you're up 60 points yesterday by the spoos being down 60. Now you could have, you always have to take on the short side. You've got to, buy in and cover yourself because you got to take a single. You can't look for the home run because in the short period since yesterday when we were down, after being down Thursday and the dead cat bounce Friday, the Fed has decided to buy corporate bonds, which is insanity. And Trump is reportedly, now is this report to get the market to turn around talking about a $1 trillion infrastructure program? Well, I got news for you. They don't have any money, which means it's another, the Fed's going to come up with another trillion of free cash. So yet another trillion coming out of the Fed and buying, you know, stuff like Hertz, which is going out of business. This is just crazy, crazy crap. DAX up 361, 3%. Remember, they were down a bunch the last couple of days. FTSE up 154, 2.5%. CAC up 122, 2.5%. Free money, except for us. Nikkei up $1,000. That's 4%, 4.5%. They were down heavy yesterday. Shanghai up 41, 1.5%. And Stang up 56, 2.4%. Yesterday, just so you know, the Dow was up 157, S&P's up 25, NASDAQ up 137. It's hard to go day to day here. Bonds, back up to 0.74% on the 10-year yield. Bund, minus 0.42, Japan positive 0.015. What do we got oil doing here? Oil's back up 72 cents, 37.84. Brent up 85 cents, 40.57. Natural gas, 166 unchanged. RBOB 119 up 3 cents. And we've got gold up $7.40, 1740. Silver up 16 cents, 1756, but still a ways from that 18 it was for a while. Copper up 2 cents, 259. We're getting a little bit of creep out of copper here. Finally, first time in a while, it was under 210, I believe, not that long ago. So what do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports?
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. Off to a great start on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways. Absolutely no issues to report. As far as the Edens is concerned, Kennedy, no issues on the inbound or outbound side. Still has that closure out in the Montrose exit on the outbound side due to construction. That apparently is going to run through Wednesday morning, so that's an issue if you're getting off there. But other than that, Kennedy is nice and quiet, as is the Eisenhower and Stevenson. Dan Ryan, I-57, and the Bishop Ford are looking good. Off the expressways, we do have an issue out west near Streamwood. It looks like just west of 290, Lake Street, which is US 20, on the eastbound side before Shales Parkway, there is a crash causing a bit of a slowdown. And then east of there, Foster Avenue at North York Road, in the western suburbs. There is an accident, but everything else looking okay out there. Weather today, it's going to be a beautiful day here in Chicago. Lots of sunshine, mild temperatures, a high of 76, low humidity. Right now it's crystal clear and 63 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunny with a high of 106 today. Right now it's clear and 75. Lastly, Chief, on this day in sports history, it was June 16th, 1995, and former Cubs great Andre Dawson, now a member of the Marlins in 1995, hit his 400th career home run. He finished with 429 on the career, but on this date, number 400 to the Hawk. Chief.
Do we have Joel? Joel, how are
you? Good morning, Chief. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. I was going to mention that I know there's people, well, that play professional sports and, for that matter, play softball and jog, that have issues with, you know, knees, hips, and you name it. But it really is strange to watch some of those older guys, before you had the medicine you do today, like playing like every day, like in pain. I mean, you don't really, I'm sure there are people here that play banged up, but you really don't see somebody playing years with like a Butkus or like a Mickey Mantle where you wonder how the hell he played outfield and he couldn't run the bases. And in the Hawk, just if he had, you know, artificial surface 2 days in a row, he's limping around. I mean, that's what an amazing, shall we say, business to be in if you got bad wheels. And guys somehow did it for years. I mean, they iced them up and did this and that. I mean, just, man, oh man, your hat's really off to him.
Yeah, the athletes were definitely a lot tougher, and the conditioning, the DH helped in baseball. But, Chief, I just real quickly, I just want to go back to something that you mentioned during the break about the spoos, right?
Yep.
And, you know, I've had debates with people over the years that have tried to tell me that it's S-P-O-O-S, right? And you know what my Twitter handle is, yeah. Right?
That's right, S-P-U-S.
Yep. Had some people, yeah, I got that. I can't believe that was available back in when I joined Twitter. I don't know, when it was 10 or 11. But, yeah, thank you for the confirmation that it was based on S-P-U-S.
Yeah, that was the first one.
S-P-O-O-S, because I've had that argument with people. But just wanted to mention that to you. And we also, for a change here, have a little bit of sports to talk about.
Yeah. What is the, we just on the way in this morning, we were listening to the Dallas Cowboys. Evidently, they had some kind of a camp or did something or test, and a couple of their guys tested positive. Now, where's this heading, Joel? If two of the Michigan guys test positive, like they're not going to play that week, or the whole team doesn't play. I mean, what are they thinking?
Chief, you missed my point.
Okay. That's not unusual that I missed
something. There's real sports coming up on Saturday.
Oh, we got
what is one of my favorite sports to cover?
Horse racing.
You got it. We got to talk about the Bell Run.
Yeah. Why did they change the order?
That's a good question. Not only did they change the order, but they changed the distance. And
really?
Now the Belmont, instead of being the grueling 1.5 miles, it's going to be what the Derby was, a mile and an eighth. And then I'm pretty sure they're doing the Preakness second at 1.5 miles. And then I think they're going to go to 1.5 miles for the Derby. Because the first thing I thought of, man, if you run these horses all 1.5 miles the first trip, they're all going to be dead meat.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, that would do it. But I have not made my official prediction yet, but I think I know which way I'm leaning. Bob Baffert, who, you know, has had the favorites and the Triple Crown winners over the last couple of years, his horse is out at Charlatan. He won the Arkansas Derby, impressive. So your favorite, who I'm not going with, is Tis the Law. He did real well. He won the Holy Bowl, and he also won the Florida Derby. So he's going to be your chalk, right? What I don't like, and you know I don't like the favorites, right?
So no, you never lay off
him. The other thing about him is he hasn't raced in 3 months.
so I think he might be a little rusty. My pick to win, the morning line, is 8-1. And you know how they say you shouldn't pick a horse because of its name? Well, this one really has a good name. It's called Tap It to Win. And really? It's a lightly raced horse who had a blazing, his last race out at Belmont, had a great trip. But that's not what I like about him. What I like about him is that he's sired by Tap It. Now, Tap It wasn't a great racehorse, but he's been an incredible stallion. And he has had, over the last 4 or 5 years, multiple stakes winners and one of the leading sires when it comes to earnings and victories. And here's the kicker. Tap It also sired Creator, who won the 2016 Belmont. And the jockey who's on him, John Velasquez, has rode two Belmont winners, Rags to Riches and Union Rags, since 2007-2012. So might throw him in some combos with Tiz the Law and Dr. Post. But there is my... I haven't spent too much time analyzing it yet, but that's my early call. To win the Belmont.
How does Belmont drops to a mile and an eighth, when they do the mile and a half, they're starting out on the track, right? Do they have a mile and an eighth shoot, or are they going to be out on the track?
They'll start them out on the... Yeah, I mean, when they do the mile and a half, they have a shoot. I think the Belmont's like a mile oval. So, you know, they put them a half mile back. So, yeah, they call it a shoot, and they can sit it back. Yeah. But I think the Belmont's actually a mile track, so they'll just, they have a shoot, and an eighth of a mile back for the horses to run in. And then I'm pretty sure the Derby's going to be a mile and a half. So, the Sport of Kings is back in the focus. I never thought horse racing would be the primary sport, because it's been going downhill for so long.
If the Derby goes a mile and a half, they're going to have to start on the backstretch, which is really going to be weird.
Yeah. Yep. I'm not sure how the tracks are configured, but it's not hard for them to set up the chutes or, have them. They can't have them start in the half in the middle of the track because, unless they pull the starting gate out. But
they do.
Yep.
Yeah, they do.
The Derby at a mile and a half should be very interesting.
Well, Arlington Park has the mile chute, right, Manny? In the back stretch of anyway, Joel, what do you think of the market? You just going to the moon?
You talked about it, Chief. You can't fight the Fed when they're buying corporate bonds. You know, they got this, the new package out. I mean, I'm just waiting for them to announce that they're buying individual equities. I wanna get on that. I keep telling myself you can't fight the Fed.
When are we gonna get the phone call and make the 100 spook points like the insiders did yesterday?
I don't know. I always have my phone on, and the overnight moves are, actually where I've been catching some of my better trades has been, getting in overnight, participating, and then today or yesterday you had some great day action, but the big boys are moving it overnight, and then a couple of the times on the rally over the last few weeks, you opened up higher and went nowhere, boom, open up 30, 40 higher. A lot of overnight movement. You got to concentrate on that 24-hour market. I've been saying that for years. That's why we have pre-market prep, to look at those, after-hours and pre-market trading.
Yep. All right, buddy. Take care of yourself. SP Futures up 38.75 in the Septembers. NASDAQ's up 123. Be right back, Mr. Kenny Pulcheri.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, an owner of Home Source Realty and a frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks. Do you know when the unofficial start of real estate season is in the Chicago area? It's actually right after the Super Bowl. Yep, it's the time when the guys will finally get off the couch and the families start looking for homes in the area. Now, interest rates also have been hovering around 4%, and the selection of properties are great. And if you're a first-time home buyer, there is an Illinois program that allows you to purchase a home for only 1% down. And that also applies to anyone who hasn't owned a home in the past 3 years. So if you're thinking about it, this is the perfect time. Call or email me, and I will send you a free list of homes designed to your specifications in your area. My phone number is 708-349-3456, or you can email me, AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com. That's AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now.
Lower North Bay Stocks and Jocks. After Maui's Mr. Weber on the board. SP Futures now up 40. NASDAQ Futures up 124. You can't beat stimulus programs and buying bonds of dead companies. It's pretty amazing. So, Kenny, my first question to you is, where's my plasma?
It's coming. Trust me, it's coming.
Every day I go down to the mailbox, I'm looking for his tube of plasma.
I thought it was going to be easy.
What?
I thought it was going to be easy to go to the Red Cross and say, listen, I want to give my plasma. You have to make an appointment, then you have to go. I mean, I don't know. If I want to give blood, it's no problem. If I want to give plasma, all of a sudden you've got to make an appointment in advance, and they got to take all these questions from you. And I'm like, what? But one way or the other, it's coming. Trust me.
Kenny, only because I like you, I will give you 10 chapters of my now 400-chapter book entitled Right. No Good Deed Goes Unpunished.
Right.
It's very true.
And it's and giving plasma to other people, why would they make that easy for you, bud?
Why would they make it easy? That's the most amazing thing to me, you know? I'm trying to get it done, and you got to make an appointment, which is okay. You can make the appointment, but now I'm in Cape Cod, so I got to make an appointment at a Red Cross Center. I got to look it up and see which one's taking it and where I have to go, which is all fine, but...
Now, does the Red Cross spin the blood and they pump up the plasma and they give it back to you? What do they do with it?
I have no idea because all I've ever done is really give blood. So I'm assuming they take my blood and then they separate it.
Yeah.
I don't think they give it back to me, but I don't know.
Well, but if you're going to give it,
I think they just take the pint of blood and then they do what they do with it in the at the Red Cross and they split the plasma from the blood and they do what they do with it.
Yeah, you're just left with the liquid part.
Yeah, but I don't think they give it back to me. I don't know what they do with it, but I don't think it comes back to me.
Well, why would you not?
Although I've never done plasma, so I don't know. Maybe it does.
Why would you give it to some perfect stranger, somebody you know, like me?
Listen, I will come out there tomorrow. If you're telling me you need it, I will come out there tomorrow and give it directly to you.
Well, I mean, if you got the antibodies, I believe that one give of blood in yours is enough plasma for three people to essentially get vaccinated for the thing.
Yeah, see, I don't know the details. I should actually know them by now, but yeah, I'll look it up.
Yeah, I think it's good for three people.
I
believe. Anyway, what do you? How do we get? You know, and other than you having a terrific personality, and I love kidding with you, you realize that you were on this show for a serious reason, and that's to get the phone call from the Fed yesterday morning that they're going to do all this crazy stuff, and from the Trumper saying now he's going to dream up a trillion-dollar infrastructure program when he doesn't have a dime to spend, and we're up, we'd be up, for God's sake, we'd be up 120 spook points. That's what you're there for.
I got to tell you something, and I put this in my notes this morning, so go out in a little bit, but the way the market opened yesterday, you know, they had gotten themselves all worked up over the weekend, these new cases in China, it was coming in from famine, from Europe, and, you know, that whole story that they spun, and then they, you know, then they jumped on with the 20 states in America that are seeing upticks in cases, which I really think is more because it's an uptick in tests. Versus a resurgence. But listen, we could sit and argue that all day long. I think it's more semantic than not, but one way or the other, if the cases are upticking, they're upticking. I get that, but what's not happening is you're also not seeing an uptick in deaths, right? You are seeing an uptick in cases just because I think more people are tested, but the death rate is not going up. In fact, it's going down, and so therefore, you'd say that's successful, right? But if you look at the way the market opened yesterday, they opened on the lows, they knocked them right out of the gate, and then they started to just steadily make its way back as if somebody knew something was coming, there was some announcement, because you have to look at the chart to just see the way it opened down, and then boom, it found support immediately, the bulls came back, the bears backed off, the market kind of ticked up, and then bang, at 2 o'clock they come out with this announcement that the Fed's now going to start buying the corporate bonds in the secondary market, and it exploded higher, right? As if, and it's so funny because whether it's the S&P index, whether it's the Dow index, whether it's the Russell, the Nasdaq, they all acted exactly the same. And then at 2 o'clock, they all surged on the back of that news. And then, you know, overnight, you had the additional news of Trump proposing, and this is also important because he's only proposing this trillion-dollar fiscal stimulus package. It's certainly not a done deal, but he is proposing, you know, roads and bridges, which is very last century type of infrastructure proposal, because in addition then he's coupled it with 21st century 5G and inner city broadband and rural broadband, which is much more 21st century. So it'll be a combination of old and new. I'm not sure they'll get it passed, but it certainly is enough to once again get the markets excited.
Well, I would hope somebody, you know, we're starting to get on your station, there's a few people that must be listening to us, Kenny, on this show or something, because your friend Stephanie Link was actually talking about 25% money supply growth last week. And yesterday there was a guy on there talking about how all we're doing is debasing the currency. Well, if I had Stephanie's email, I would send her a thing saying, hey, look again, my friend, it is 65% now is the number over the last 6 months.
Yeah,
that is, or 3 months, 38% over 6 months, Kenny. That didn't happen. That didn't happen during the Civil War, for God's sake, with the greenbacks. I mean, these guys. I mean, the idea of Trump having a trillion-dollar infrastructure, he's not. He has nothing. If the Fed doesn't come up with $1 trillion for him, there's no way in God's earth that those guys are going to go borrow that trillion from the population and spend it. They don't have any borrowing ability left. What is the Fed going to own of corporate bonds now? 60% of somebody's companies?
Yeah, I have to look at the details today of the plan. Right? Yesterday it was kind of vague still, but we're going to learn more today, right? Because we're going to learn more today and tomorrow, because Jay Powell appears in front of the Senate Banking Committee today and his semi-annual appearance in front of Congress, and tomorrow will be in front of the House. So we can fully expect that there's going to be lots of questions, not only on broad Fed policy, but on the announcement from yesterday. But look, yesterday's announcement was also not completely out of the blue, because remember back in March, when the market was crashing and the Fed came out with this additional package, they talked about buying corporate bonds in the primary market and then potentially in the secondary market. And on May 9th, they started in the primary market, and then yesterday, or actually today, they're going to start in the secondary market. And so it's not, wasn't completely out of the blue. The market did know that that was potentially one of the tools, and they just took it out of the toolbox yesterday and they decided to use it.
Yeah, they only have one tool, and that's a printing press.
Yeah, well, okay, that's true, but then they can take that tool after they print all the money and then do what they want with it, which is clearly what they're doing.
Well, I have a question for you. I mean, I don't know, I think you're probably on the Stocks and Jocks list, whether you listen to it or ever look at it. I'm not saying you should, I'm just, I don't, but a couple of the guys are absolutely all over this, and they are convinced that what they're doing is flat ass against the law. It's not in their charter at all.
Well, I think these are unprecedented times, and while it may not be in the charter, I don't know if you call it against the law or do you just call it unprecedented moves just because of where we are, what has happened.
But somebody tells you...
The COVID pandemic has came out of the complete left field and no one expected it, so I guess, you know, drastic times call for drastic measures.
Well, I mean, I'll be very brief with this. I helped a lady who lost, by the way. She was running for state treasurer, and I learned a lot about how state treasurers have to invest. McKinney, they have to invest in U.S. government securities. That's it. Well, if times get bad and you found out that Kenny Polcari was the state treasurer and he bought bonds in Matt Weber's company, I think Kenny Polcari goes to jail.
Well, okay, I think you're right. I think you're absolutely right. But again, I think that the rules are very fluid right now and that the Fed is being given clearly a lot of leeway. Right, in terms of trying to help deal with this crisis. But look, we're going to hear more of that today. Maybe there are going to be some senators or congressmen that suggest that this is either illegal or outside the bounds of the rule set. We'll see. It's going to be interesting to see. But one way or the other, I think the country and the legal system is giving the Fed a little bit of leeway.
So there's no nothing that says somebody's going to read him the law tomorrow and say, if you do it tomorrow, the Justice Department's going to be there with cuffs.
I don't think they're going to say that. I think they're going to talk to him a lot. And listen, the other thing about today and tomorrow's appearance and presentation is that we're going to get a lot of questions asked by senators and congressmen that are written by staff members that don't clearly understand what's going on anyway, which is a whole other conversation we could have. But it'll be interesting to see how he responds, right? How he tries to explain. And then I think it'll become clearer either on what the next step is or whether or not this is, you know, considered illegal. I think it's going to be a tough call to say it's illegal. I just don't think anyone's going to go there with him. I do agree. I hear what you're saying. I just don't think that anyone's going to call out the Fed and say they're doing anything illegal.
Well, yeah, quick question, because I know we're running out of time here, but I have to ask you this. You and I talked during the entire mortgage situation when you were buying mortgage bonds. And I believe we agreed, which we're not supposed to do on radio, we agreed that the Fed probably does not have anybody there, a department, that could evaluate mortgages. They just bought them. Now, I want to know how the hell today they're going to go out and who's going to make the call to buy GE bonds, Hertz bonds, somebody. Who is that guy going to be?
It's interesting because if you read the journal today, and it wasn't completely clear, but again, I'm sure we'll get more clarity on it over the next couple of days. But there's a broad, diversified index that's being created of bonds that are a possibility within that index in the $9 trillion secondary corporate bond market. They've got to meet certain requirements. And if they meet those requirements, then they're eligible. If they don't meet the requirements, then they're not eligible. So we're going to learn more about that. That's a good question, but we're sure to learn more about it today.
Well, I, as you know, I have cocktails once in a while when the bars were open with people here from the Fed, and I've met a real lot of them, Kenny. There's not one of them that's ever mentioned anybody that has that skill set. They'll tell the Fed what bonds to buy and what stocks to buy, and I'm dying to find out if they're getting advice from the bank.
Well, wasn't that the whole BlackRock? Didn't they hire BlackRock to do this whole primary bond thing? So isn't it BlackRock that they hired, or was it Blackstone?
Which makes me absolutely like it even less.
Well, okay, we can have a conversation about that, too. I'm just surprised. I'm shocked it wasn't Goldman Sachs, quite honestly. But
they're out.
You know, they did hire BlackRock to do that, so I know in the primary market, so I'm assuming BlackRock is going to play that starring role in part two of this plan.
Why isn't it Black Pulcheri and you just give me the call on what you're buying?
Why don't you tweet at them and ask them that question? They're servants.
Oh, God. Kenny, take care of yourself. Great as usual. Be safe up there at Cape Cod. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTIsecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTIsecurities.com.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is now available to you. We are offering three of our research newsletter, the Daily World News Report, our daily stock and futures trading recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks, including potential shorts. Each of these reports are available via email before the market opens. Go to our website, www.dacsresearch.net, to obtain the tool that meets your trading and investment needs. Or call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription. 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures trading have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Alright, Mike Hart from Tasty Trade is ready.
There's something happening here.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tim Howell. Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures up 47. NASDAQ futures up 140. So we're up, from being down 60 yesterday. We gotta be up, 140 or 130 from there. And, I understand that, we did not get the pass through. I understand Mr. Mike Hart got this call and said Blue Horseshoe likes corporate bonds and didn't tell us.
And yes. Tom, how are you doing this morning?
I'm doing fine, but I'm just miffed. I'm off the list again.
You what?
I'm off the list. Then who gets the front run? All these announcements from Feds and Trumps and stuff.
Well, absolutely. I think it would be nice to have some of these announcements a little bit beforehand. But it does seem like we're getting more and more sort of events that are causing bigger moves in the market than we typically see.
And, of course, that can be attributed to the volatility that still exists out there.
Mike, what is your read, as I've heard the Board of Trade now is pushing off to August, reopening the floor, which, you know, I don't know if that makes any difference anyway anymore, but what is your read? I mean, you guys have, you know, a lot of clients over there, and we have some here, and I do a lot of trading for my clients, but I manage stuff, and I'm abhorred by the state of the, quote, market. Anybody who thinks that this is, quote, working, oh, man, it's working fine, everybody at home, and exchanges all closed. No, it's not. I mean, some of the stuff is fairly liquid. Where would you even put a standing order these days? I mean, I suppose there's a spot. I mean, the idea that you can bump the, on Friday, there had to be two or three times, I'm sure you were watching it, where the NASDAQ, went flying down, say down 10 points, and within maybe 3-4 minutes, it was back up 50 or 60. Could there even have been five trades in there? I mean, there can't have been a standing order. I mean, does anybody think that this is actually, these are orderly markets?
Well, I think, you know, with all the algorithms running, you just typically don't see standing orders, especially in the NASDAQ when it's moving around. A lot of it's just going to be program trading up and down. There is liquidity there, but it gets really wide, Tom. It gets, you know, 10 or 12 points of basically the difference between the bid and offer can be that far away. And, of course, as a retail trader, you do not want to be trading during a period when there's simply no liquidity.
Well, what is we do a lot of stuff for people and use machines, I'm sure like you do. When I used to stand in the OEX pit, I mean, you know, probably before your time, there were two guys, well, individual firms had their own guys that were on the headset to the CME, to the S&P futures pit, the SPOOs, and they would constantly be sitting there with their hands, you know, 60 bid at 70. What is the equivalent of that now? Does anybody even know where the stuff's? I mean, if I were to call in to do a four lot of the NASDAQ right now and buy it or sell it, where am I liable to get filled away from what I see as the last trade? Is there a market someplace that somebody can give me?
Well, there is a market, but the velocity of the market makes it in such a way that there's no real time to grab what's actually in the market. You almost need to throw a bid or throw an offer out there and just get filled sort of within a range. It's different than it used to be as far as types of trade. And I think, you know, the argument that algorithmic trading is fantastic as far as it does provide liquidity, but it comes with a caveat. That's liquidity during markets that are, call it normally traded, where volatility is relatively subdued. But in markets like this, and especially when it really starts moving, that is a critique of algorithms, is simply everyone starts pulling their bids and offers because the risk is too great to be quoting every side of the market.
Well, how do I know, for instance, because I did, this is not like yesterday or anything, but I had a client a while ago, and how much you guys, I'm sure when you get a trade like this, you're like me and say, what am I doing with this trade? I had a client who brought in some, they weren't just municipals, they were like TIF bonds, Mike. And, and of course I said, well, I'll do my best, because, you know, RBC, they're pretty good at this. I mean, it's one of the strong parts of their game. I mean, if anybody's going to be able to do some of this stuff, I mean, usually, and even you guys, as big as you are, you're going to need some clearing firm help sometimes with some of these esoteric bonds that you don't normally run into.
Absolutely, and you want to talk liquidity. You're going to see a lot less liquidity, obviously, for something esoteric or a little different than normally traded bonds that we trade.
But some of the games that, you know, that people, shall we say, should have gone to jail for are back in the day. I don't know if you were around when they had the Instanet market and the over the counter market, the NASDAQ market, where it was a firm to firm thing. And
that was a little bit before my time. Yeah.
Well, you know what? It absolutely sucked. And some of the rules there were such that if you want to buy 1,000 shares
and you saw an offer at like a quarter, and all of a sudden you're filled at three ace, while they were still quarter there, they'd say, well, none of those guys added up to the 1,000. So instead of buying the 800 for you and saying you got 200 left, they'd go to a third guy who would offer you the whole 1,000 at three ace, and he'd go clean up the ones at a quarter. When you sit there, you're like, he'd do what? but anyway, I tried to do this TIFF buy. It was a Philadelphia TIFF. And the bids are like, they're like 60 bid at 90, like on the
right. Yeah, you know, that's on, what on, I would know, expect. Type of,
so I said, look, I'll sell these things at like 88. Let's see, or 85. See if anybody has any. This is before interest rates did what they did. So I expect my offer to be there at 85, and they're, oh no, you're at 86. What do you mean? I'm at 80, and they said, well, if we can sell them. At 80, my offer wasn't on there. So they go, we're at 86. And I said, well, I'm at 85. Well, if we sell them at 86, we'll buy them from you at 85. And I'm going, that's what they used to do in these markets years ago.
Sure, anything for that tick. Any way you could somehow squeeze a tick out on the professional level, that's exactly what we were doing too.
Well, but I wonder when you mentioned about if you run down there with your 4 or 5 lot in the, If whoever you use as an order entry system, if something's actually there, if they're not grabbing it ahead of you and then selling it to you a tick away, or two ticks, or three, I don't even know. There's no way to discipline. That's what the options is, a little bit of history, Mike. That's what New York Stock Exchange sort of had, but the CBOE, by having an auction market and by disseminating bids and offers, you could essentially police your own order. So if you looked there and said IBM, 160 calls were 4 to 1/8, and you went down and you knew it would take a little while to get the order down there. It wasn't electronic like now. But if the market changed to 4 and 1/8 a quarter, and you knew your order wasn't there yet and you got paid a quarter, at least it was a fair game. Or it could go the other way. It could be 3 and 7/8, 4, right? And all of a sudden you get an eighth better. But the Board of Trade, they always felt, on the futures side, that the bid and offer was their proprietary stuff. And only a member could call down and get the bid and offer. So you could actually call those guys and say, what's the bid and offer? Well, it's their 1/4, 3/8. Okay, buy me 10. You filled it a half. Well, what's the bid and offer? 1/4, 3/8. You'd go, wait a minute.
A game like that is something I wish I was allowed to play.
Yeah. Well, they played it pretty well. But I'm wondering, none of this stuff ever disappears, Mike. You know, it's like the fetish that people forgot for a century and comes back. That's the game that people want to play. You want to front run your customer order, or somebody does. And I just wonder, in the midst of these things flying all over the place, and alleged security and regulation we have, I wonder if we're not back to the same game. That people are buying in front of their own order.
Yeah, I mean, you could see that, actually. That's a very fair argument why you might see that. I think in today's market, it's a much more difficult game to play, only because we don't see the bid-ask as wide. So you're dealing with just a smaller profit that you can pull out.
Well, I mean, just in the OEX, if you... You looked up to Spoo John or Spoo Ray, were the two guys that did it for independents like me. You'd say, where are you? They're at 70. You'll buy me 2. Filled at 80. Well, where are they? At 70. You go, whoa. What did you just do? I mean, I don't see any governor like that on the system now. I have no idea where I'm going to get an offer or a bid of one of these futures. Do you?
You simply don't. And when the market is really moving, say, following the unemployment number that we just recently had, you simply need to be aware that market orders are pretty dangerous or very high risk in a market that's moving, because, like you said, things get wide and the resting bids and offers just aren't there, so you can get filled. We've seen some nightmare fills in the past just on market orders coming in during one of those crazy times in the market.
Yeah, and I think, do you tell people, I imagine you do, that if say the futures are trading, well, right now they're 31.16. Well, if you want to buy 5, you can always just say, pay 31.19, right? At least have some kind of a limit to where you're not going to get it back, you're not going to pay 31.50. But
absolutely. And, you know, as far as that game of sort of front running the order, that was the first game I learned as a trader as well on the floor of the Chicago Stock Exchange. We were sort of trained in the way where you do lean on those orders. And when they were there, it made for, I think, a pretty fair market. And but as we lost those resting orders, it did feel like rather than adding the efficiency that was the intention of these systems, it actually took away a little bit.
Well, yeah, I absolutely agree that somebody knew that all along. How's that for a way of putting it? Just saying. So what do you make of this? How do you? We're up. I mean, I know you have your economic background. What do you say to a 36% money supply growth this year? We're pushing 63.
What I say is, you know, we're looking at an experiment that we haven't seen before. The theoretical textbook sort of economic evaluation that we might give, I don't think it really holds up to just the gravity of what's going on. And I also think this is connected globally, so it becomes much more of a difficult sort of situation to analyze. As it's not just trading within itself. We're looking now globally at this slowdown given the pandemic. And with the money growth, typically this leads to an inflationary period.
Well, I mean, it already is in the stock market, right?
And you could argue that is just asset appreciation in the form of added cash to the system is what's actually causing these stocks to at least maintain where they were and in some cases actually trade higher.
Well, Mike, by the time the last inflation fiasco ended, an awful lot of people countrywide, me not, I mean, no, that was management, had inflation clauses in whatever contracts they had because there were inflation clauses in most of the purchase agreements. I mean, it had gotten that part of the fabric of society.
Sure, and that's something we have not seen in a very long time. I don't know what period you're talking about, but I assume it's in the 80s.
Late 70s, early 80s. So, yep. You know, if the inflation was 10%, I mean, most unions didn't get full, they might get 75% of that. So the first thing they did was get a 7.5% raise in addition to any other raise they got. It was, it was a COLA adjustment. Cost of living adjustment. How's that for a term? But that whole infrastructure took really a while to build. So if we end up this year, and my worst fear is that, you know, these idiots at the BLS come out and say, oh yeah, man, inflation this year is going to be 10%. I don't see the guy making $40,000 getting a $4,000 raise, do you?
Not at all. And that's been the problem is, we're not seeing wages catch up to where the inflation is. And I think that ultimately is going to be the economic problem that we're dealing with, not just next year, but probably for a couple years, anyways, at a minimum, because the gravity of this situation.
What do you, so in terms of the stocks, I mean, I actually sent a letter out to my Notre Dame buddies yesterday. I mean, I think, as much as I think the market is overvalued, I think you have to be there. Because if these guys actually do double the money supply, the market's liable to double. Your house is not going to. Your job, your salary's not going to. So I think you need to be in and have to be protected and just pay the price for the put insurance.
Well, you know, the last time we saw money injected like this, you could say 2008 was a sort of that experimental period where we did see this. And it was a success. You can argue from the concept of did asset prices go higher? Well, they did. But like you said, the wealth wasn't created in the same linear fashion.
I think the difference, Mike, and again, you see if you agree with me on this. The difference is if you and I are the two heads of the Fed and we see something totally screw up like in 2008, like in, well, now with the COVID or whatever, if we see the money market liquidity, all of a sudden they can't, sell off the 6 month stuff, and people are demanding their payments and so forth. And it's a black swan event.
Mm-hmm.
And if you and I think that the price of the bonds that are in there, and there might even be government bonds, okay, they shouldn't drop from 100 to 80 or something today, because, by the way, we know the government's going to pay you off in 5 months.
Mm-hmm.
To bring ourselves in there and say these markets are failing because of lack of liquidity, and add the liquidity to them for a temporary period of time, I think both you and I would do that in a nanosecond. But if you fast forward 6 months later and say, hey, the mortgage we bought, the thing's only worth 70 cents. Oh, no. We're going to make sure, we're going to go in and we're going to buy it from this bank at 95 or 100 like it's okay. We're going to refloat the bank by buying this at a number of which, you know, it shouldn't be. That to me is an entirely different, as my mother used to say, that's a horse of a different color.
Right, and you know, we see this sometimes, and it's only in these sort of periods of high volatility where the price actually isn't accurately reflecting where a fair market might be trading, and in some cases you can mathematically calculate where, based on the models, it could be trading or should be trading, and theoretically it's there, but in reality it can be way off, and it can stay way off. So you can't necessarily say, I know it should be priced here, and I'm going to hop in there, because it could easily expire wherever the market prices it.
Well, put another way, if you're adding liquidity, theoretically, those are all good buys, right? So the Fed is actually going to, I use the term, make money. If the Treasury bond drops to 96, which it maybe shouldn't, and the Fed buys it there and adds some liquidity, and 6 months later they are rewarded with the full 100 cents on a dollar, they just made money, right? They not only helped the market, they actually made dough. But if you get to the point where you're buying, $1 billion worth of mortgages at 100 cents on the buck, when every fourth grader knows they're worth 60 cents on a buck, now you just gave $400 million to some bank. And not to you and me, right? And I think when you talk about buying these individual corporate bonds, are we buying them to prop them up because the company's no good? Or are we putting into a market where their liquidity is just not there? I don't see anybody saying there's no liquidity, do you?
You don't see liquidity being mentioned as sort of a driver of price, but you gotta have the liquidity story in there, especially when you're talking about corporate bonds. As I'm sure everyone knows, corporate bond markets much, much less liquid. And in a period of real uncertainty in the bond market, it wouldn't be surprising to see prices really drop there.
Again, hometown airline, they went out of business once in terms of the stock. I sure as hell don't want to see it again. But just pick one, Mike, which is what, you know, I've always been the idea that your economy is pick Betty Weber, you know, pick Thomas, pick whoever. The economy in the country is the sum of all those people, right? Now, United Airlines, stock's trading 42.30. It's up 3.30 today. It's 8.5%. These guys are losing, and, you know, it's not all their own fault. I get that part. They hope to be down to $30 million a day by the end of the third quarter, so they're probably pushing 45-50 today. Now, they went out yesterday and they borrowed $5 billion based on the collateral was their frequent flyer program. How is that, first of all, not a liability? How'd that become an asset? I have no idea.
Well, somehow they always win with those airline miles. I've never been able to cash mine in.
Well, yeah, so maybe that's why they, but the point, me neither. But let's say here's a stack of, how do you, your I'm going to say your buddy, even though you probably don't even know the guy, your buddy Al Arian came on this morning and said, beware of zombie markets that are completely mispriced. I have no idea what this United Airlines would be trading for if the Fed wasn't. Are they going to be buying their bonds today? Now, if they do, at what price? I mean, what are the chances of this company being around at $40 million a day? I mean, how do we even know?
And, you know, ideally, that's all reflected in the price. So ideally, you get a market that's fairly reflecting the, you know, the future, where we think the future is going to be pricing the airline. But right now, I think it's very fair to say, and especially the idea, I didn't know he came out and called them zombie markets. And to me, that just means the idea is out there that you really are getting mispriced assets in this market. The difficulty, again, is how do you know without looking in hindsight that something's mispriced?
Well, I mean, I guess you would, if you look at the amount of money, I'll keep picking on these guys, I shouldn't. Say, you know, United Airlines, they've got $10 billion, okay? And, yeah. and their drain is $2 billion a month, okay? You and I and Maddie and whoever else can sit there and go, all right, what is the world going to look like in 5 months? If it looks exactly the way it does now, looks to me they're toast. Okay, but are we going to say that in 2 months we're going to have, you know, 40% of our business back, and that $2 billion a month is going to be one? At the end of 5 months, is the $1 billion a month going to be $300 million? And, oh, by the way, at the end of 6 months, they're actually cash positive. I mean, that's the decision you and I normally would make, and a million other people that are valuing stocks. But now we have to sit there and go, well, is the Fed going to give these guys another bill or two or three, or see that they can borrow at 1% where the numbers really should be like 15, you know, given their situation? These are external things that I don't know how to price. Do you?
I don't know how to price, but, you know, I certainly would be putting probabilities against it. And I would say at that point I'd be looking into the options market just to see where the prices are being priced sort of out in time. Maybe you look at, we call it the one standard deviation level, which just all it means is what is the market pricing around the future price that stays within a range of one standard deviation, which also equates to like 68%.
So you look at the essentially the volatility skew going out and say, what are people thinking here?
That's what I would do. And I think you need to have a handle on where that volatility sort of curve is at the moment. And it just gives you a sense of sort of overall market momentum.
You know what, Mike, let's talk about that after the break, because we haven't talked about volatility skew, and I think you're probably the most expert of anybody we have on it, so let's talk about it. SP Futures up 68 now. We're putting a whip to it. NASDAQ Futures up 172. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Harrell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar.
To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com, that's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Holley. He's Mr. Matt Weber, Mr. Mike Hart with us. We have a Dow is up by 700. We have a record jump in retail sales in May, 17.7, which is bigger than the drop in April, which is, boy, somewhat hard to believe, but I'll roll with it because that's what those are the numbers this morning. So that was a wow. That's a big shocker. So we're up 70 now, and the S&P is we're up 172 in the Nasdaq. Let me refresh everything else here because this stuff is moving, as they used to say on the floor. They didn't say stuff. Anyway, the Dow's up 700. Over in Europe, we've got DAX up 426, now 3.5%. FTSE up 196, 3.2. CAC around up 151, that's 3%. So everybody's off to the races here pretty good. Asia, well, these guys obviously can't react on this number. The Nikkei was already up 1,000. That's 4.8%. Shanghai up 41, 1.4%. Hang Seng up 567, that's 2.4%. Hey, we totally forgot, Mike, about the Hong Kong and trouble with the Chinese. We don't care about those Chinese this week, it doesn't appear. 10-year yield up 0.06 cents back up to 0.76, maybe go past the 80 if this keeps going. Bund is minus 0.41, and the Japanese 10-year is positive 0.015. Oil up 98 cents, big move 2.5% there, 38.10. Brent up $1.10, 40.82. Natural gas actually down a penny, $1.65. RBOB 119. Gold is up 5 hours. We got silver up 12 cents. So everything is moving to the upside here. Just about everything, Matty. What do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports. I have no red on the page except for the VIX, which is down like you would expect. Everything else is green.
No red on the traffic screen either. 37 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. Very quiet still. If you're coming in either direction on Lakeshore Drive, looking good. Same for the Edens and Kennedy. Eisenhower, Stevenson, nice and quiet. Southside Expressway is looking good. Off the expressways, a couple of issues to report. In the city on the north side, on California, the southbound California at Montrose, there's an accident blocking the right lane. So there's a bit of a slowdown there. Then out in the suburbs, Army Trail Road,
westbound at Swift Road, there is a crash. And then just west of there on Army Trail in Carroll Stream at Gary Avenue, there's an accident. Southwest of there in Wheaton, North Avenue, at Coon Road, there is a crash. And then up in the northern suburbs, up near Waukegan, Green Bay Road, which is Route 131 on the southbound side at Washington Street, there's an accident. So a few things to report there, but everything else looking good out there. Weather today is more great news. Just a beautiful day today. It's sunshine with a high of 76, low humidity. Right now it's crystal clear and 64 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunny and hot today, high of 106. Right now it's clear and 76. Chief.
Great day for softball or basketball. Oh, wait a minute.
Or golf.
Can't play softball or basketball.
Sure you can. Just not in a league.
Or in a park.
Well, we played basketball in a park last night.
Yeah, but you guys
were dozens of others.
You were illegal. It was contact sports.
Yeah, I don't think they're enforcing that because every park that where they didn't actually take the rims down, which... In Lincoln Park, anyway, those are few and far between. They actually took the rims down on a lot of basketball hoops, which is insane, and haven't put them back up. But the ones where they didn't take the rims down are packed every day.
How much you want to bet some Gladys Kravitz was taking pictures of that? She shipped it off to Lori, and it'll be down tonight.
They've been packed. They've been packed for a month.
All right. Well,
so no one's said anything yet. But and it's not. I mean, even those courts on Clybourne that have a lot of traffic going by, including the train and cars and cops going by, they're not saying
that's
nothing.
Private property, though, isn't it?
No.
That's a park?
That's a park, yeah. There's a playground and a full-court basketball court.
Really?
Yeah.
Mike, we'll talk a little bit about one of the things that, I mean, people, the retail people, and, you know, I guess a lot of the, I'll use the term talking heads on TV, continually to talk about the VIX. Now, the VIX obviously had a big spike over 41 last Thursday. Now it's down to 32, down to 2 this morning. And I'm saying if this rally holds, I bet we're under 30 by the close tonight, but we'll see. But you and I, the story is, you know, always underneath the VIX. I mean, I've noticed I haven't done other than let my long stuff just run these last couple of days, which is nice.
Mm-hmm.
I've been able to squat, and what I really like to do are my calendar spreads. I like to be long. Well, for retail people, as you well know, you can't buy near-term and sell the out-term because you're considered uncovered. So you really can't do that as a retail trader. So what you really
definitely
want to do...
Definitely not in the, yeah, in the VIX, for sure. Not in the VIX.
Well, the VIX is different futures. That's even more of a... What I'm saying is you and I, you know, we'll look and we'll say, now, wait a minute, why is the volatility this week in XYZ, the implied volatility... 35, and then next week it's 38, and all of a sudden, 3 months from now, it's 45. And you and I might say, well, gee, maybe it might be the election, it might be God knows what. If it's, or it might be earnings out 2 weeks. If you look at the different strikes in different months, that's where the story is, right? That's not in the one number, the VIX number, necessarily.
Sure, absolutely. The VIX is going to represent all the expectations around what the market, we call it the fear index, how much fear is out there and how much uncertainty is out there. Now, typically what we see is in the future, volatility is higher because if you think about it, you add time to a contract, then the uncertainty begins to increase. So we call this a state of contango. It's a term thrown around a lot. All it simply means, describing the shape of the curve when you see sort of a normal time period. Now, when you're in a period of time like we are now, what happens is no one's too worried about what's going to happen a year from now. Everyone's worried about what's going to happen tomorrow. So because of this, what happens is all the risk gets placed to what we call the front month or the months that are actively traded near term. So all the volatility gets up there. And then you see a curve that actually slopes downward, which we call backwardation.
Well, you have a perfect example of what our friend Mike just mentioned to us is, which time horizon are you talking about? And I'm going to say that our friend Mike is talking about probably the last 11 or 12 years, correct? Which is a long enough time, by the way, to have a time horizon. If you went beyond before that, you would have directly the opposite slightly opposite situation, Mike, is it, you would say, okay, if IBM is going to be, you know, a 16, which historically it has been, well, used to be, that probably you would get, especially if there was earnings in a few weeks, you're going to get a 17 or 18, and then next month might be the 17 and a half, but when you went out a year, you would settle in at the 16 or 15 and a half or something. There'd be that slight degradation because over a year, there's going to be four earnings. There'll be all kinds of stuff. People mm-hmm. are more willing to insure a company like IBM over a year or two period. You know, you might have been some interest rate issues than you would tomorrow. But starting in really the fiasco in 2007, 8, and Obama coming in, Bush leaving, and all the stuff that was going down. And people, maybe it had to do with some of the controversy of the Obama presidency. It always was, because that's why we stopped doing the Protect the Index program for a while. Because I was paying, you know, a 25 volatility for puts and selling calls at a 12. Where everybody was convinced that we know we're going to Oregon and there's a cliff along the way, but it's just not going to be today. Where guys were happy to sell stuff this week at a 7 or 8 vol in the SPY, but God help you if you try and get somebody to sell you something like after the midterm elections that wasn't at a 22.
Exactly. And, you know, we saw this for the last election. There was a little less uncertainty, actually, interestingly enough, than what was realized. So you can say there was volatility pumped up, but it didn't capture the election of Trump, so it actually caused a volatility increase. But usually what we see is a volatility decrease because what happens is once that number or uncertain event comes out, the market reacts to it, knows what it is, and then the uncertainty goes away because it's happened and we know what the outcome was.
Like, I wonder how much of this, well, the market, how you price options is totally psychological, right? I mean, that's how I mean, the public price options. People think professionals do.
Well, you know, it depends on how you're using those options. As an insurance bet, where you're just trying to protect and you use a long strategy of buying options, If you're just trying to protect, then you're pumping up volatility by buying those options. So it's psychological in the sense that maybe everyone's buying options at that point in time. Maybe there's a lot of uncertainty and a lot of people want insurance. That's going to cause the price of the options to begin to inflate, which ultimately causes volatility to increase.
Right. Implied volatility to increase. But
that's right.
What I'm saying is there was and Matty, I love your opinion on this, but if you go back, you know, 20, 25, 30 years, the psychology, because there were all kinds of market blips back then, for God's sake. We had the crash, we had, you know, the mini crash, we had the United Airlines went under after if somebody had a $3 bid for it. I mean, there was all kinds of crap that happened. Long-term capital and Argentinian debt. I mean, you can rattle them off. But the psychology of let's say, dub people, as Mayor Daley One would say, is we've got all these potholes in front of us, and we might have an implied volatility of a 30, say. Okay, but year or two out, this will all be behind us, and cooler heads will prevail. It really was, I'm going to say, I'm not, it's one explanation, and you would see your long-term volatility and your leaps, they called them back then, of your spider, instead of being a 14, it might be this week because there might be something weird happen. Of course, now it's way above 14. But if you went out 2 years, it'd be a 12 and a half. You'd say, okay.
Right.
But there was a sense that further out, cooler heads would prevail. Now it almost seems, Mike, and I'm asking you the question, maybe leading the witness a little bit, that people are somewhat okay with, like, next week, but they don't know what the hell's the world going to look like 2 years from now. It's just a different, it's a whole different mindset that by being a little older, I just kind of sense that I don't think people think 2 years from now things are going to be a hell of a lot better and maybe worse.
Well, from, I I don't have an option chain in front of me, but the last time I looked at the VIX options, it's interesting because we still are in a state of backwardation, Tom. So there's a lot more fear in the short term.
Oh, I agree. Right now, yes.
In the long term.
Right now.
And this is just based on the level of volatility. So as far as, obviously, there's way more on certain events and all this stuff that's typically priced in. But as it stands right now, there's a lot more uncertainty in the short term.
Yes.
And just to tell you, this isn't extremely rare to see this, but it only happens about 18% of the time. 82% of the time, volatility actually begins to increase out in time.
I'm going to say that if we could do this, and I don't know, there's got to be one of these universities that spends a fortune. I'm going to say if you take the period of time from 1991 to 2006, you'll find just the opposite.
You would find
that your volatility out a year and a half or two was slightly less than the normal day-to-day stuff, the next month or two out.
Sure, and that's actually kind of what we're seeing now, because in the short term, there's a lot of fear, and then in the long term, right. Fear actually goes down.
Well, that's why the Protect the Index program is doing so much better, because I'm selling calls at a 40 and buying puts at a 20.
Selling calls at a 40.
I mean, near term.
You're selling out in time.
I'm saying for a long period of time there, it didn't work because I was buying puts at a 20 and selling calls at a 5. That didn't work at all.
that's about the opposite of what you want to have happen.
Yeah. And I think also we also might have some interest rate. How much of the longer term stuff do you think is interest rate? I mean, interest rates in the option model. And tomorrow's if you're pricing an option tomorrow, you don't even care about them, right? But how much of the long term call options, if you go out 2 years, are people thinking we might actually have a 3% interest out 2 years?
This will have an impact on bond options somewhat, but it's going to indirectly affect it. We actually did a lot of studies on the, it's a Greek called Rho, and Rho is just a complicated way to say interest rates, but looked at the effect that Rho has on option prices, and it was actually surprisingly very minimal. So when most of the firms that price options, they don't really weight Rho with anything that's valuable for their model.
Oh, absolutely. I would agree. But now, when I started, Mike, the interest rates were 12%. And if your put got anywhere near in the money, you were making like 10% on short stack interest. So you were driven to exercise that put in the short stack and make that money. It was the driving force on virtually everything that you did. When you've got your, you used to get a graphics package every day of your positions. And the one thing that the Black-Scholes and a lot of these models really had trouble with was when the put became an exercise. So I'm starting in the middle of this. I better back up. If you have a long put, say you got a put to sell a stock at $100 and the stock's trading 60. Well, right now you could hang out, but there's no big deal. But in those days, you would want to exercise that put into short stack at 100, because now all of a sudden you're getting interest on that. Which now nobody,
sure.
There is no such thing as, is there even short stack interest anymore? I bet it can't be anything.
And again, minimal. It's not going to affect your decision. Ultimately, the difficulty now and actually back then of buying calls or buying puts is the fact of decay.
Right.
So options lose their value over time. You get paid for that, but it also comes out in the options price. And then also it's priced over and above the market of where it'd be fair to sell. So you end up you end up paying a little bit more for the calls or puts, which you have to pick your times, which sounds like you weren't doing that strategy all the time, but you were more or less picking your times that you would step
in. I think a lot of people don't know the basics of option pricing, of a call option. If you were to say, okay, instead of buying a piece of property, a stock, whatever it is, out a year, or just buying it, say I want to own the land, I want to own the stock, if you say, give me an option out a year, I mean, what your first thing you think of, okay, I don't have to pay interest on what I just bought, because normally there is interest, not like today. So the call is going to carry the option, the interest premium, correct?
So, let's say you bought the call at $100.
Yeah.
Or you bought the call at $5, and the current price is $100. So you need the price to go, and you bought the 105 calls. Let's say.
Right.
So you bought the 105 calls for $5. You need the price to go to 105, but then you need the price to go another $5 because you paid $5
right.
for that call.
Right.
So ultimately, you need the price to appreciate over $110, and anything over that price, you're covered. You get to keep that. So you would buy a call if you expect the price to increase, but you don't necessarily want to buy more houses.
Right. So an interest rate is a positive, and if the stock pays a dividend, that's a negative. So your mm-hmm. your premium, if there's no volatility whatsoever, should be the interest rate minus the dividend. Right?
It depends. We don't use our models that way, so we don't really include the dividend.
The original Black-Scholes didn't have dividends in it either, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, because all this stuff has somewhat changed because it hasn't happened in a while. But I will bet you a dollar, my friend, that in the next decade, that all the stuff that we learned on interest, especially what the Fed's doing, that we had to learn about interest rates when I first started, you're going to have to learn. Because these guys are pushing us there. I mean, you're going to end up with I guarantee you, if the inflation rate's 8%, interests are not going to be 1. Because you're not going to give somebody 100 stones, and at the end of the year, the guy brings you back 93 and says that's
right.
A good deal.
You know, ultimately, I think what we've always seen is the basic foundations of economics hold true. And it's kind of like the pricing of securities that we were talking about a little earlier. The price can get off, and it can stay off for a little while, but eventually we'd expect a convergence.
Well, what do you make of? I mean, right now, I actually did my continuing education yesterday, which was fine. The center does a nice job with that. One of the few things that I think they do a real nice job at. But you actually learn stuff, and it's pretty interesting. One of the models in there, Mike, must have been an old model, because they were talking about some lady who was 72, and how because her stocks had gone up so much, which, you know, duh. I mean, the last few years that's happened, if you had the right stocks anyway. In retrospect, if you had the right stocks, they weren't all that obvious going forward. Now she started out trying to be 70-30 bonds versus stock because she's older. Well, now their stocks have gone up so much that she was 50-50. And how, you know, if you put your head in the sand, you're going to say, well, this lady at this age, you know, the classical models would tell you she should be 70% fixed income, yet how do you put somebody in 70% fixed income now when it's not paying anything?
Yeah, and I think that's kind of from a different angle here. That's been part of the problem is there's no return there. So where do you find return? Well, you can find return in some of those bigger name stocks that have a lot of liquidity. Or the market indices themselves, SPY, we're seeing prices move higher. We're seeing returns increase. So I think you're seeing actually a flow from fixed income into the equity market, because where else are you going to chase returns?
Well, plus your bond, if it was a 6% bond you bought 10 years ago and it's a 30-year bond, and you paid 100 for it, par value, it's going to be trading over 100. So, I mean, would you really pay 110 for the damn thing? Probably not. So, if somebody's willing to, I would recommend a lot of those clients say, God, 110, 115, sell it. And you wouldn't pay that for it.
Well, and that's what you would think. But as we've seen recently, especially in this market, we've seen prices that we wouldn't expect to see, especially because liquidity had dried up pretty much.
Right. What is right now, what would you, given this massive move here today, because we're talking about buying corporate bonds, this is in the last 24 hours, and the president coming out with another, essentially looking for another trillion from the Fed, which I think in the past they've said they're willing to do, right? So that's yet another trillion. So now we'll be pushing 9 or 10 on the balance sheet. And, you know, just it's hard to even maintain perspective on this.
Absolutely. And, you know, as far as market prices and volatility levels, I think it's very fair to say this market is pricing in another trillion at a pretty high probability. I don't think we would have seen what everyone keeps referring to as the V bottom. We wouldn't have seen anything like this had it not been for the monetary stimulus and now the expectation of future stability added through monetary stimulus.
Mike, if they throw the other trillion in, they've thrown more money in the economy in the last 6 weeks. It's double the GDP of 1980. That's scary or what?
It's unbelievable, yeah. And the fact of the matter is no one knows where this exactly leads. There's a lot of speculation,
it's
never been done.
We got a dash. I can talk to you for another hour easy. Thank you very much, buddy. I hope to talk to you soon. And SP Futures now up 92. 92.
What do we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
No either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. HomeSource Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.